my hands shake. It's Tama's fault for all that champagne heart business. Beautifully done.
Thank you.
This is a continuation of the collaboration we did in the first issue of the Church House magazine, where we were really examining through photography and writing what it's like to be two artists in a marriage. This is the second year, and it's a little harder sometimes.
Just a few adjustments
have been made. But so we decided to make a list of topics that have to do with our lives right now. And we each wrote in response to them, and that's what we're going to read to you as these paired pieces.
Yeah, kind of carrying the experiment of Trick House, we wrote separately and then combined those pieces to see what would come out of that. So
it's an experiment. You
yes.
get that, right?
Okay. Continue.
On endurance. She begins to break down at the end. Miraculously, for so many years, all of it held until then. And by the end, I mean the moment at which she found herself without the confidence to go on. What had held her all the time, she realized, at the end of confidence, was as thin as cobweb, a frond of hardened sugar. There was no audible crack or snap, but the unseen which propelled her broke away. The fence of words she rode flung loose, and she tumbled. Like Jack and Jill, she tumbled, and with surprise she realized there was indeed no way to stop oneself. In fact, she sees it might even take a broken crown. This falling, too, is going to have to be endured.
Endurance is a scar, a callus, a toning of the heart's muscle that begs for more. More, more.
On being a fucking loser. Does anybody relate? It's a shop window, only instead of a Natalie dressed mannequin, there's you. And Jesus God, what are you wearing? Talk about unbecoming. It's a hand-me-down, isn't it? And just because it's free doesn't mean it looks good. And is that your mother's purse? Because that is not a style I've seen in years. Sometimes I look at you and I think, man, she makes being an artist look bad because you're not even thin. You're not at all consumptive. You're just shabby.
Being a fucking loser is par for the course. Just don't think about it. It's best that way.
On ocean. An octopus is camouflaged as a clump of algae. A man tells us this, but we can't see the animal. The video does a slow-mo to show the octopus spiraling out, revealing a glaring eye and the long unfurling. He scuttles away in fury. It is terrifying and gorgeous. Ben says, I love the emotion of wonder.
We know you don't swim in the ocean unless you want to be taken by it. I see a wave rise behind your head, and I know that it knows who we are.
On camping, Ben is asleep beside me in the green globe of our tent. I stare up through the screen at the trees above. The kids in the site across from us are drunk. At midnight, I hear them drag their inflatable boat down to the stagnant lake. I hear them shove the boat across the gravel. They curse the shallow water. There is a distinct and twirling laugh. It belongs to a boy named Ralphie, and they love him. They tease him terribly. Finally, I hear the thunk, thunk, thunk of oars. Their voices and Ralphie's laugh fade. I have been a drunk teenager rowing a boat across a flat, skeetered black lake. At midnight, I have felt the rubber wail under my armpits, drunk the warming beer, tangled with the legs and the wet, leafy slosh at the bottom of the boat. Time has altered me.
When we go camping, we lean back. The rocks glow red and hum with heat. The sky unfolds like a fan, and in the morning, our waking echoes across the water.
On sleeping, we live near a train. In the summer, the sultry announcer's voice rolls over to us, beckons us to other towns. We hardly hear it anymore, or the clack of wheels, the scree of brakes. We barely notice the rectangles of light passing on the tracks. The train rides a schedule, calm and steady functioning. But the other night, late, I heard about 5 trains blow through with horns at top speed, no stops. I didn't want to misconstrue it as a sign, but what else could it have been?
A bat in the house, circling room to room, after so many nights of worrying, of sleeplessness. A thin-winged storm funneled down, tiny knob of a head, listening for the fellow insomniacs, screeching claws out, and flying off soundlessly into the rich black yawn of an open window.
On fortune. I'm told that when I was a baby, I was plucked from a cold stream by a witch with fingers like wet twigs. The witch lifted me in her arms, pressed me tight against her withered digs under her cloak, and felt an unaccustomed flush of blood to all her limbs. She set me in a basket under her shelves of bat wings, red shrooms, toad livers, and dried eyeballs. She cleaned a set of pigeon bones and dangled them above my basket. She dripped goat's milk into my soft pink mouth. She told me before she let me go, her crusty white lips trembling, "You will cross the great waters."
Good fortune thinks that bad fortune won't notice him in the room, so he ignores bad fortune and tries to enjoy himself, until bad fortune trips and spills red wine all over him, and the two trade off.
On picnics. There was a time in my life that I hated picnickers. I hated couples with grocery bags that birthed hoagies and cans of soda, that simple universe of two at the park table. I hated people eating Chinese food from cartons by the river. I hated group picnics where the 11 a.m. preparation, bags of chips, expectant coolers could send my loneliness floating up in me like a host of balloons. I imbued them with love they surely might not have known. But now I realize they are only amateurs. We even picnic in January.
When we picnic, I imagine us from above, looking down on our ceremony of eating well in this world, and I see us as we are, as lovers, as animals, as artists, as simple gods.
On eating. I don't even think it's the actual eating so much. It's the pre-eating, the recipes, the possibility. It's the thinking about cooking. Figs, gorgonzola, walnuts, prosciutto and parsley, braised peaches, squash blossoms stuffed with goat cheese, a dark lamb stew. I flip the pictures, look at the recipes in the morning. It is, in a way, like fucking, except you can have your coffee at the same time, and when you're caught in the act, no one knows it's obscene but you.
When we eat, we talk, we watch birds fly by, we move around the table, around the room. When we eat, we break a sweat. We talk to our cats and we point with our forks. We gorge ourselves on brie, plump olives, saucisson, and beer. We cover ourselves in butter sauces and dab the corners of mouths with napkins. We hover out of our bodies over endless tables, laid out with tandoori, panko fried scallops, bangan patiala, grilled flanks, drunken noodles, rich curries, and herbed roasted vegetables. The goat cheese omelets fly. I sneak an extra potato onto your plate. We get another round, and we stay as long as we want. We hang out in the kitchen at midnight and snack. You say yes and nod with your eyes closed. The phone rings. And we don't answer. Thank you, thank you. So Juliana Spahlholz is next. She's up next. Her work has appeared in Cake Train, Cranky, Gargoyle, and Sleeping Fish, among others. She lives in upstate New York.